Welcome to the Gnostic Waves, the show that brings you all things of a mystical, philosophical and psychological nature. Thank you for joining us this week. So last week we had on the show Christian Keefe talking to us about the movie The Matrix and reviewing it from an esoteric point of view or from the point of view of awakening, which interests us very much. And Christian is going to continue on this week. And Christian, where you left off was the point that we are led to the path and given the teachings, but we have to do the work and do the awakening ourselves. Like someone can't do that for us.
Yes, that's correct. So at the point in time that we left off, Morpheus was trying to teach Neo about the awakening and that it's not in the mind, but it's beyond the mind. The consciousness is an aspect which is beyond the mind.
You have to let it all go, Neo. Fear, doubt, and disbelief. Free your mind.
So I remember when I watched this film, and that's a very impactful scene where we see someone jump from one building to another, and it's very cool because his cape is billowing and he looks back, and it's just really an amazing scene, a leap of faith, we could say. And so we understand that Morpheus is awakened to some extent, that he can go beyond boundaries and borders and things like this because he has freed his mind. And he's told Neo that's really the essential nature for the awakening, what he needs to do. You have to let it all go, Neo. Fear, doubt, disbelief, free your mind. And so Neo jumps and he falls. And he's trying to get out of the mind by using the mind. And so he's sort of saying, get out of the mind, Neo. Come on, Neo, get out. And then he inevitably falls because he's still in the mind. In the next scene, Trinity brings Neo some food, and then when she's outside, Trinity is talking to Cypher about the Oracle and when Morpheus will take Neo to the Oracle. In the next scene, it's another big scene where Morpheus and Neo are on the street, and Morpheus explains that the agents are everywhere, that they can go into any person. And he says that they're not with us, they're against us, so to speak. And so they're walking along just a normal street, and a woman in a red dress walks by, and Neo looks at her. And Morpheus says, you can't trust anyone, and he freezes everything, and it looks very cool as well. And then Neo turns around, and the woman in red now is an agent. The woman in the red dress turns into an agent. In this way, in the nature of the awakening, the scene represents that we have to be what's known as on guard psychologically, that we have to be aware of our physical environment or our external environment, but that process of awakening also means that we need to be aware of our psychological environment within or an internal environment. So someone who's asleep only knows their physical environment and sometimes not so much. But when we wish to take the path, we have to know the physical environment and also the psychological and esoteric environment or country within us. So it's a good scene that demonstrates that. The ship in the next scene is in trouble. The sentinels come, the sort of squid-like machines, to attack the ship, but they escape. And then Neo and Cypher have a talk. And as we said, Cypher represents all of our inner problems, or what we call the ego. Throughout the film, he exhibits jealousy, lust, anger, doubt, envy, gluttony, ignorance, greed, pride, many more aspects that we don't really want. And he's only in the film for a short time, but he sort of talks about these and he does them. And these are the things you could say that we're looking to destroy within us. That these things, when we start looking a little bit more deeply at them, we might like them or think that they're worthwhile, but that there is something of a higher vibration, we could say, or a virtue that is greater than these things. And so in the next scene, we see Cypher betraying the group. He goes to Agent Smith and he talks to them about plugging back into the Matrix, and he's willing to give up his friends and his crew. So the scene goes like this.
Do we have a deal, Mr. Reagan?
You know, I know this steak doesn't exist. I know that when I put it in my mouth, the Matrix is telling my brain that it is juicy and delicious. After 9 years, you know what I realize? Ignorance is bliss.
Fantastic scene there. And really, Joe Pantoliano is just fantastic in this film. Really nails Cypher. All the acting is fantastic in this film, and direction and writing. But he's just fantastic, and he really nails that scene. And the final words that he says is very interesting. Ignorance is bliss. And I can tell you right now that that is the most false statement that you'll ever hear. Ignorance is not bliss. Ignorance is the source of all of your pain and suffering. So Cypher is happy to betray the crew and go back to sleep. He didn't really want to take the red pill, or he's got buyer's remorse and wish he took the blue pill. He's even said it with Neo in a previous scene. It's that aspect of us who wishes to go back to the illusionary nature of life. And he goes on to say that he wants to be rich and famous when he gets plugged in. He wants to be an actor. And so the next scene contrasts this scene, because the crew eat together in the ship and they're basically eating something akin to gruel. So we have the gruel that everyone's used to eating, and then we have Cypher, who wishes to go back, even though it's an illusion, even though it doesn't exist, that the steak is juicy and delicious, that he would prefer the lie. And so they go out, and Morpheus says that it's time for Neo to meet the Oracle, basically to see if he's the one. And this is the scene where Cypher pretty much betrays all of them. This is the whole setup, and it's a fantastic lot of scenes that come from here to the rest of the film. So it's very interesting, because on the way to the Oracle in the car, Neo sees the Matrix with different eyes, whereas before he just looked at the Matrix, you know, in a normal way or in a normal fashion, like things are the way that they are. He sees the Matrix in a more illusionary manner, an illusionary way. He sort of doubts the things that he never used to doubt. And he talks about that he used to get noodles at a noodle bar, and they were really good noodles. But he sort of understands that they weren't noodles at all. They were just electricity going into the nerves of the brain, that it didn't actually exist. So Neo asks Trinity what the Oracle said to him just as they're about to reach their destination. And Morpheus once again says,
Neo, come with me.
And as we know, up until this point, Neo 100% trusts Morpheus, and so he follows him almost, you could say, instinctively. And so it's the time where Neo and the Oracle are going to chat, and Neo and Morpheus are going up in the elevator, and they have a conversation about the Oracle.
And she knows what? Everything?
She would say she knows enough.
And she's never wrong.
Try not to think of it in terms of right and wrong. She is a guide, Neo. She can help you to find the path.
She helped you?
Yes.
What did she tell you?
That I would find the one.
So we see that Morpheus's belief of finding the one actually comes from the Oracle. He was told by the Oracle that he would find the one, and so he believes in that. He believes in the Oracle. He believes in this greater aspect. And so we find out also that Morpheus is a guide to a greater guide, which is the Oracle.
I told you I can only show you the door. You have to walk through it.
So as we said, Morpheus is a guide. And he gives that element of choice once again. I can show you the door, but you have to walk through it yourself. You have to actually physically do it. You can't think about it. You have to actually physically walk through the door, and then something else will open up in your life. Something else will open up in the process of awakening. And so Neo walks in and he sees all the other potentials, and they're all kids. Neo bends a few spoons, if I remember. And these are all the other candidates who may be the one. And so then Neo goes in, it's his turn to meet the Oracle. And at that point in time, she's making cookies. And it's very that the Oracle is a very nice. She's very wise. She's to the point. And one other aspect is that she's quite humble. If we contrast that with the restaurant that Cypher and Agent Smith hatched the betrayal, she lives in a very, you know, average sort of little apartment with not much going on. And so she has that humility to her. Like Morpheus says, the Oracle says what is needed to push him in the right direction to the awakening. So we'll talk about this scene with the Oracle, because she says some things that actually don't come true. But what she's really doing is pushing him, pushing Neo, nudging Neo towards certain things that he needs for the awakening. So the first thing is to nudge Neo towards Trinity and love.
I can see why she likes you.
Who?
Not too bright, though.
So the Oracle tells Neo that someone likes him, and he's pretty much oblivious to this. But she pushes him in that direction. She lays the seed. She lays the foundation. And then she continues on, and she talks about the awakening in terms of love. She reinforces the awakening, love, and Trinity, and these things are needed all in together to experience it. And so she actually talks about the direct experience of love and the direct experience of being the one.
Being the one is just like being in love. No one can tell you you're in love. You just know it through and through, balls to bones.
So I really like that. She relates the awakening to love, and that you have to experience it. You just have to know it. There's just a certain way, a certain feeling, a certain flavor that you know that's very different to other things that you've ever had before. Even though you've never experienced it, you still know it. So she looks him over, and something bizarre happens in the film, something that we might not have expected. She actually tells Neo that he isn't the one.
You got the gift. But it looks like you're waiting for something.
What?
Your next life, maybe. Who knows? That's the way these things go.
So the waiting that Neo, or the waiting for something, is the love of a good woman, of Trinity. So Neo is really looking for that. He doesn't even realize it yet, that he needs Trinity. And then she lays it all on the line. So she's got that idea. She's put the seed of Neo being in love with Trinity. And then she also lays it all on the line. So there's a supreme choice. A sacrifice has to be made. It's a choice of life and death between him and his guru.
Are you sure you want to hear this? Morpheus believes in you, Neo. And no one, not you, not even me, can convince him otherwise. He believes it so blindly that he's going to sacrifice his life to save yours.
What?
You're going to have to make a choice. In the one hand, you'll have Morpheus's life. And in the other hand, you'll have your own. One of you is going to die. Which one will be up to you?
So once again, it's all about choice. she lays down the choices. Either you're going to die or Morpheus is going to die. But there's going to have to be some sacrifice. So the conversation with the Oracle is interesting. She says many things, but she says that Neo isn't the one, which she gets wrong. She says either Morpheus or Neo will die, and she's wrong about that. But she is right that he's going to break the vase. So the Oracle just says what is needed for Neo to move along the path, to push him in the right direction. Doesn't matter whether it's right or wrong, up or down, left or right. She just needs to say specific things for his point in time to help him move in the right direction. And it's like this in the awakening that we must listen, we could say, to higher aspects of ourselves, to listen to the consciousness and not the mind anymore. So as we said, Cypher betrays the group and the agents capture Morpheus. The crew tries to escape out of the Matrix but are trapped by the agents. Neo and Trinity barely escape. Morpheus is captured. Tank is almost killed. And the rest of the crew, including Cypher, are killed. And so things are perilously bad at the moment. So Morpheus is now being tortured by the agents because he has the codes to the mainframe, which means that the machines will win the war against humanity. They're trying to work out now, what are they going to do? How's it all going to work out? But we come back to Morpheus and Agent Smith, and Agent Smith says something very interesting.
Have you ever stood and stared at it, marveled at its beauty, its genius? Billions of people just living out their lives. Oblivious.
So this is the nature of the awakening. Not everyone wishes to awaken, and that people are oblivious to the awakening, to the path. And there'll become a time, maybe in this life or another life, when they will wish to awaken and they won't be oblivious anymore. So when we're asleep, we're oblivious to the world. Things are random, and suffering is random. So Neo, Trinity, and Tank debate whether they should kill Morpheus or not, because they can sacrifice him and the machines won't get the code. And pretty much just as Tank is about to pull the plug, Neo tells them that he's going to rescue Morpheus, and they consider him crazy. But he says,
I know that's what it looks like, but it's not. I can't explain to you why it's not. Morpheus believed something, and he was ready to give his life for what he believed. I understand that now. That's why I have to go.
Why?
Because I believe in something.
What?
I believe I can bring him back.
So Neo is starting to believe himself. He doesn't really care about who's going to die or whether he's going to die or Morpheus is going to die. He knows that Morpheus will die if he doesn't do anything. So he's interested in sacrificing himself. The choice hasn't been given to him. He makes the right choice. And it could involve a huge sacrifice, basically his own life. So in this way, he's starting to believe that he's the one. And at this point in time, Morpheus is looking really bad. They're working him over, basically torturing his mind, trying to extract that information that they're looking for. And very interestingly, once again, Agent Smith gives us and Morpheus a wonderful piece of wisdom.
I'd like to share a revelation that I've had during my time here. It came to me when I tried to classify your species, and I realized that you're not actually mammals. Every mammal on this planet instinctively develops a natural equilibrium with the surrounding environment, but you humans do not.
You move to an area and you multiply and multiply until every natural resource is consumed. And the only way you can survive is to spread to another area. There is another organism on this planet that follows the same pattern. Do you know what it is? A virus. The human beings are a disease, a cancer of this planet. You are a plague, and we are the cure.
So Agent Smith being particularly harsh there, but there's wisdom in the harshness there. So really, we look at humanity as a whole, we can say that we are a bit like that, that we go to environments and we don't really fit in there, and then we just move on. We consume the resources and move on and do the same and the same. But really what Agent Smith is discussing there is the internal aspect, which we call the ego, that aspect which is against the awakening within us. So he says something very interesting that, and it's about the equilibrium. The ego is out of balance with the environment, with reality. It doesn't see things the correct way. For instance, like anger. Anger is completely out of balance with the environment because I have a certain concept that I think reality should be, and then there's something different happening in reality. So like we said with someone cutting us off in the car, we can get angry from that because we believe that everyone should behave really nicely on the road for us. So that belief doesn't come to fruition and then we get angry. So we're out of balance or out of equilibrium with the environment of how that environment is, and the environment and the internal aspect within us. So these aspects that we've talked about, anger, depression, they're not in equilibrium with the environment, and there's not a correct balance or equilibrium really within us. So I really, really like what he says there. We can put it as a macrocosm, as the way that humanity is, but we can also see that that's how we are internally as well, that we're out of balance. So Neo and Trinity go in to save Morpheus. All three agents are there waiting for him, and there's amazing action scene after amazing action scene. They blow up the lobby. They blow up the elevator. They take a helicopter. They machine gun their way, save Morpheus, and then they escape. But one of the interesting things is that on the top of the building, as they're taking the helicopter, an agent comes, and the agent shoots at Neo, and then we have the famous bullet time effect where Neo dodges the bullets and the camera rolls around and we see it from many different angles. And I like it because thematically the bullet time effect shows us that Neo is now acting and not thinking. So Morpheus has told him that we shouldn't be thinking about what to do, we should just be acting. And now Neo is starting to believe, and now Neo is now acting and not thinking about things. And this bullet time shows us because he just acts. He just, you know, moves over and leans so the bullets don't hit him. This whole scene is just massive. And Neo eventually saves Trinity and Morpheus in only what can be called a really spectacular way. And Neo saves Morpheus first, and then Trinity needs saving. And then Trinity is pulled up, and Morpheus says this.
Do you believe it now, Trinity?
So Neo's just done spectacular things. He's saved Morpheus. He saved Trinity. He's beaten the agents almost. And he says, do you believe it now, Trinity? So in a way, Trinity is starting to believe. But when you watch the film, you can really tell by the way that she's looking at Neo that it's not really a matter of belief for her, but it's a matter of love. You can really see her, like, the way that she looks at him, it's an aspect of love that's blossoming within her, that she it's not about belief for her, even though that's the way that Morpheus sees things. It's about love.
The Oracle. She told me.
She told you exactly what you needed to hear. That's all. Neo, sooner or later you're going to realize, just as I did, there's a difference between knowing the path and walking the path.
So this is Morpheus at his most profound. In order to walk the path, you must directly experience the path and reality. As we said, not just read about it, conceptualize about it, theorize about it, read it from a book, talk with our buddies down at the pub about it, or anything. We must act, we must do, just do it. So we realize this, that there's a difference between walking the path, to physically walk it, and to know it. So we directly experience the path when we're walking it, and when we know it, we indirectly comprehend it or understand it. So this aspect of direct experience is starting to really hit into Neo at the moment. He's starting to do things now. He's starting to awaken to some degree. And Morpheus says that to really nail home everything that's happening in the film for him. So they're still in the Matrix and they have to make their way out of the Matrix. And it gets to a point where Morpheus and Trinity leave the Matrix and they make it out. But Neo goes last but doesn't make it. And so there's a big fight with Agent Smith in the subway. And this is another interesting thing, because in the movie, every time that there's people with the phone to go out of the Matrix, Neo always goes last. He always sacrifices himself. It's okay for everyone else to go first and I'll go last. So there's an aspect of making that choice, that sacrifice for other people. And so there's a giant fight with Neo and Agent Smith. At the start of it, Trinity still is not 100% convinced, and she says to Neo,
"Run, Neo, run." What is he doing?
He's beginning to believe.
So Neo and Agent Smith, as I said, have this huge battle in the subway. Agent Smith has Neo and he's about to kill him. There's an oncoming train and he's just holding him down and it's not looking good for Neo. And is the way of Agent Smith, he decides to say a few words.
Hear that, Mr. Anderson? That is the sound of inevitability. It is the sound of your death. Goodbye. Mr. Anderson?
My name is Neo.
So Neo sort of forces his way and jumps his way up and gets off the train track. And unfortunately, or fortunately, Agent Smith gets hit by the train. So it's very interesting in that scene, because Neo no longer sees himself as Thomas Anderson anymore. He doesn't, because Thomas Anderson is the fake aspect of him. That's the part of the Matrix, of what the Matrix called him. And Agent Smith says, "Goodbye, Mr. Anderson." And Neo refuses that name and he says, "My name is Neo." So he doesn't believe in that name anymore. He doesn't believe in the Matrix anymore. He believes himself to be Neo. And so, as we said, Neo escapes and Agent Smith gets cleaned up by the train, but because he's pretty much impervious, Neo runs out the subway. Agent Smith comes after him. The other agents try to get him as well. Neo's desperately trying to find a telephone. He patches back to the operator tank and he goes up a flight of stairs and he makes it into a building. It's all pretty hairy, scary sort of stuff. And then we start to hear a phone down the hallway and we're hoping that Neo is going to make it out of the Matrix. The opposite happens. So Neo opens the door and goes into the room and he sees the phone ringing and Agent Smith has worked out what he's going to do and is waiting for him there, and he shoots him. I think he shoots him twice, and it's sort of very quiet in slow motion sort of thing. And so Trinity's back on the ship, and it's all sort of gone to hell. Tank and Morpheus have a really belated sort of, you know, unhappy look on their face. But Trinity says this.
Neo, I'm not afraid anymore. The Oracle told me that I would fall in love and that the man that I loved would be the one. So you see, you can't be dead. You can't be. Because I love you. You hear me? I love you.
So Trinity professes her love to Neo, and then Trinity kisses Neo. And this is back in reality. And that love of Trinity brings Neo back to life. And back in the Matrix, Neo resurrects. So Neo is awakened now through the love of Trinity. So she was just as much as an important part as Neo and Morpheus. That the connection between Neo and Trinity is needed. That we have to understand the nature of love itself on the path and in the awakening. And so when Neo awakens, we see the Matrix from his point of view now. And instead of seeing the illusory nature of the Matrix, the normal superficial aspects of the Matrix, Neo now sees the Matrix as the green code that we see on the screens. He now sees the Matrix for what it is, a computer simulation. And so he is awakened now to the true nature of the Matrix. So the agents shoot at Neo, but he calmly stops the bullets and the bullets fall. The agents, especially Agent Smith, comes over to beat Neo up, and Neo can defend him easily now. And so in this way, Neo now understands the boundaries of the Matrix. He understands the awakening. He knows what he can and he can't do in the Matrix. The Matrix doesn't have control over him anymore. And so it gets to the point where the agents start running, and Neo actually goes straight into Agent Smith and explodes him. And then the other two agents pretty much run away. And then there's all this stuff on the ship where the Sentinels are getting to him, and it's almost happening. But back on the ship at this point in time, Neo wakes up, and he kisses Trinity. So that love is bonded between Neo and Trinity. So at this point, Neo has now awakened, which is what the whole film is about. And then in the final scene, it's like he's the king of his domain now. As I said, the Matrix doesn't have control of him anymore. And he's on the phone, and he's pretty much talking to the agents, and he says,
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
So in this final scene, as we said, Neo is the king of his domain of the Matrix. He's awakened. He no longer has any fear. He's no longer ignorant. He knows his place in the Matrix. He knows that there's no controls with him. The Matrix no longer controls him. He lives in a world in the Matrix without rules, as he says, without controls, without borders, without boundaries, a world where anything is possible. And then at the end of this speech, he gives everyone the same choice. Neo invites everyone to live the awakening just as he has done. He says, a world where anything is possible, where we go from there is a choice I leave to you. And then he shows us directly how he can very easily be the king, or he no longer, or he personally has control of the Matrix, and he does his Superman thing, as it said, and he flies off. And then that's the end of the film.
Thank you very much for that very thorough review of The Matrix. Okay, we'll just go to a short music break. I've picked a track from the film, and then we'll be back for the meditation part of the show, and Christian will be leading us in that. So we'll be back in a short while. This is the Gnostic Waves show. Okay, and we're back on the Gnostic Waves. We've just had a movie review of The Matrix by Christian Keith, and now he's going to be leading us into the meditation part of the program. So take it away, Christian.
So thank you, everyone. To begin with, you really need to have, we could say, the physical body under control. So what we mean by that is to relax the physical body as best we can, so it doesn't interrupt our meditation. We can go around to the different parts of the body in a conscious way, we could say, to be more conscious of our physical body at this time and find anything, any aspect of our physical body that is tense and that needs to be relaxed. We start with the left foot. We can start with the big toe and just relax that left big toe to make it feel like it's a giant marshmallow. Soft, fluffy, no tension. Bringing our direct attention right there and nowhere else. And then do that with the rest of the toes on the left foot. And then move our attention across the foot to the heel, being conscious of any tensions, any issues of the foot, bringing our consciousness there and relaxing that, because we can have many tensions in the foot. Moving our way up our lower leg, the calf, to the knee, to the thigh, with those big muscles there. Thank you. and then to the buttocks, just on the left-hand side. And then once we've done that, we can start on the right foot with the right big toe. Bringing our attention there, relaxing the muscles, the tendons, the bones, everything there. Moving across. Relaxing every toe. Moving down, relaxing our right foot. Checking for any issues of stress or muscles. As we said, the feet can be full of stress. Moving up the leg to the calf. To the knee. And to the thigh and the upper leg. And then finishing with the right buttock. Just remembering as we're relaxing the physical body, that if there is a place that is a little bit more tense, to take a little bit more time and then gather us back to where we are, because it's important to get rid of the major stresses of the physical body during a meditation. And so we move to the lower back, a place where we can hold much tension from the work of the day. And we slowly move up the spine, slowly move up the back, just seeing if there's anything really out of place there, any pain, and trying to relax that until finally we get to the shoulders, the upper back, another place where we can hold much tension in the body. I was talking to an osteopath recently, and he said the physical workers and laborers have issues with their lower back, and the office workers on the computer all day have issues with their upper back and their neck. So whichever we have, we can relax. So we move down from our left shoulder with our upper arm, relaxing our upper arm. Moving past the elbow, relaxing there, relaxing the forearm, and then relaxing the hand and each individual finger and the thumb. So as I've said, it's very important in the relaxation and in meditation to make sure that our consciousness, or which part that we are aware or using as the awareness, is connected to what we want to do. So it's very easy for that awareness to be lost. And if we lose it, we just come back to what we need to do. So we go over to the right shoulder and work our way down. Past the elbow. Down to the hand and the five fingers, making sure we relax each finger. And then we come back to the neck. We relax the back part of the neck. And then go to the front of the neck. And then we go to the torso, starting at the stomach. Slowly working our way up the torso to the chest. Finishing at the neck. And lastly, to relax the physical body, we go around the back of the head, seeing whether we can find any tensions. And then moving to the face, where we may not sense any stresses or anything out of place or any imbalance. But just take your time, concentrate on different parts of the face, because it's different for everyone. And bring the consciousness to any part, for example, the temples, the upper lip, the forehead, the mouth area, whichever we see to be stressed, and relax it. So continue scanning the face, the ears, the jawline, so the entire physical body is relaxed. And so when we relax the physical body, if we're happy that it won't destroy our meditation, we can continue on to the next step. But if not, we can go back through the body entirely again and relax it even further. So I just wanted to run through that because one of the aspects of our meditations is we can rush into working with the mind or the emotions or the consciousness or doing a mantra. But it's good to have the physical body relaxed, and it also brings our mind to a point of awareness outside of the mind for some time, which helps us in what we wish to accomplish for the rest of the meditation. Thank you.
And thank you, Christian, for leading us through that practice, feeling very relaxed and ready for more. And if anyone is interested or knows anyone that's interested in attending Gnosis or knowing more about Gnostic classes in the Newcastle area, then do a search for Newcastle Gnosis. And I'm sure the website for Christian and his partner So's Centre will come up. Or else, thank you for tuning in this week and hope you'll join us next week, same time, Tuesday, 6:30 p.m. Adelaide time. And don't forget about the website. That's gnosticwaves.com, GNOSTICWAVES.com for past show recordings. And also you can leave a comment there for any future show requests or any particular esoteric movie requests that we could ask Christian to come back and speak on, then please do. Or have a good evening and see you next week.